Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Marcy Cheek, and this is my show. Say what? When? Where? And most importantly, why? Because I've just been asking that why word my whole life. And tonight I wanted to talk about racism. I'm going to go back to the beginning of my experience. But I want you to be sure and listen all the way through to the end, because I have the solution to racism. Yep, the absolute perfect solution. So let me start back in the 60s. My husband decided to leave and go pursue greener political and social pastures, and so I was left with three kids to get raised, and I had gotten the house in the divorce. But the neighborhood where we had purchased our home in the Midwest had been chosen by the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People as the neighborhood in our town where one of the first integrations was forced. The NAACP financed the first black person to purchase a home in our all-white neighborhood. And that first black person in our all-white neighborhood moved in right next door to me. Now, the natural dividing line in our city between the black neighborhoods and the white neighborhoods was the White River. And the media made a kind of a to-do about that at the time. But actually, the Indiana-Miami Native American Indians called the river Wabahani, and it meant white sands. So eventually, it was just called the White River. The West Fork of this river runs 312 miles up and down the state of Indiana, and the East Fork of the river runs 192 miles, and then where they come together, it runs another 50 miles into the Wabash River. So the river runs through Indianapolis, where I lived. Well, I decided I couldn't fight this situation. I might as well try to understand it, so I went to the library and checked down as many books as I could find. The best two I read were The Black and White Crisis by Silberman and Black Like Me, which was a story of a man who darkened his skin and went and lived undercover down in the South as a black person. Well, the first black person in our neighborhood was the full-time housekeeper for a big real estate developer in our city. And she moved into her beautiful four-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath, all-brick home all by herself. But soon I began to notice an older man who showed up on a regular basis. And he seemed to take care of the yard. He put in and took out the screens and would paint and fix things. Well, one day a group of four to five black teenagers climbed over my fence and went into my backyard to play basketball on our concrete driveway by the garage where the basketball hoop was. In addition to trespassing on my private property, they were also making all kinds of racket. And my youngest daughter, who was only 3 years old at the time, was taking her nap in the back bedroom that looked out over the backyard. So I went to my back door and I yelled out at them, "Hey, you kids, my daughter is sleeping, and you're making way too much noise. And you're trespassing on private property, and I want you to get off the property right now. I want you to leave. Please leave." Well, they just looked at me and started talking black and white, back and forth between them, and they said, "Did you hear, Whitey? Did you hear what Whitey say? Whitey say we making too much noise. She want us to leave. Do you think we should leave? Hey, Whitey, we ain't leaving. We're playing basketball. And so they just kept playing and making a noise. Well, then I noticed the older black man next door come out of his back door. And he came over to the fence and he said, "You niggers get out of that yard and you get out right now." And you know what? Those teenagers flew out of there like they were being pursued by a lion or a tiger. And then the older black man said to me, "I'm sorry, ma'am. If you have any more trouble, you just call me." It was very interesting to me that a black person can call another black person a nigger, because apparently that's a word that is exclusively the use of the black culture and has special meaning to them. Well, my neighborhood was one of the first all-white neighborhoods chosen for this experiment of forcing integration. And with all experiments, sometimes you just have to do it several times before you get it right. But trying to force anything is against the natural spiritual laws of attraction. And all that happened with this first experiment and with several other attempts that were made by the NAACP to force integration is that all of the white people just moved out to the suburbs, losing everything that they had invested in their homes, and another all-black neighborhood was created. And these black people were not prepared for the responsibility of homeownership. They were just given these beautiful homes with no preparation or finances for maintaining them. And soon the city just had another slum and another slum, driving all of the white people out to the suburbs, which then became beyond the tax base for the city, and which then just continued to deteriorate and deteriorate. Oh, yes, the white people were punished. We lost all of our life savings, and we were reduced to ground zero, where we all had to start over. In the high school in our area that I had attended, and when I had attended it, it had been ranked fifth in the United States in scholastic achievement. It just became a technical school, and then it finally closed. And today, within the city limits of Indianapolis, is now listed in the top 10 of the most dangerous cities to live in the United States. A big black contingency surrounded by white suburbs. I am just so glad I moved out to California in 1986, where even though I live out here as a minority, at least we all live in respect and honor for one another. I live in Southern California, which is 40% Mexican, 38% white, 10% Asian, 7% black, and 5% all other. So 62% are colored people, and 38% are white. I think I'm going to start a National Association for the Advancement of White People. And why haven't the Mexicans gotten all upset because they're not in all the movies and in all the commercials? There are way more Mexicans than there are black people. I just love the Mexicans. They love being in America. They love having all the benefits of life and freedom and justice for all. They work hard. You know, they know how to do anything. They can put on a roof, paint a house, cook, fix cars, plant gardens, do landscaping, be a plumber, electrician, drive a cab, raise their families. They contribute to the overall good of any community. And have you ever wondered why Asians prefer to live in their own community unintegrated? It's also interesting to me that Los Angeles has no majority ethnic group. Originally, Spanish King Carlos III recruited 11 poor farming families of indigenous, European, and African origin to come up here to California and settle it. This was going on between 1769 and 1777, which was when, you know, the colonies and all on the East Coast were developing and moving towards the Revolution. There were two Spaniards, two blacks, four Mexicans, and three mulattoes with 22 children who came up here to California and settled this area. And white people didn't come to California until the California Gold Rush in 1849. So white people have pretty much always been in minority here in California. Now, there is a spiritual principle that unless we have a personal investment in something, we don't have any real respect for it or feel any responsibility towards it. Because perhaps if these black people who the NAACP used to force integration had worked as hard as my husband and I had worked to get the down payment to buy our home and then make the payments on that house every month, they might have had more interest in their home. Perhaps if they had worked as hard as we did, first of all, delaying our family to get my husband's college education so that he could get a good job, so we could save enough money to make a down payment on a house, they might have appreciated having their home more. And perhaps if they had had any experience at all in making a house a home like we did, we painted and wallpapered every square inch of our home. We just put this adorable mural on the wall in the kids' bedroom of the Cow Jumped Over the Moon. They just loved it. And I polished my hardwood floors every single week. And so perhaps if they had had more experience in caring for a home and loving a home, they would have taken better care of things. But since it had just been given to them, they just took it and lived in it without any kind of responsibility. I had gotten the house in the divorce settlement, but I couldn't sell it because every house on the block was for sale. So I had to end up giving it away because it was no longer safe for my white daughters to walk to school or even to be outside. And when I finally was able to sell it, we had lost all of the equity in the house, and I got less for it than we owed on it, in addition to having to put on a new roof and pay off the furnace as part of the buyer's conditions, which just took all the money that I had. So there I was, broke, with no home and three kids to get raised on a $5 an hour secretarial job. So my oldest daughter went to live with her dad, and my son and my youngest daughter moved in with my mom and my stepdad. I noticed that the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People is still active today. They have a conference coming up May 23rd through 26th in Naples, Florida. So I did some research on the percentage of colored people in the world today. You know what? Almost the whole world is colored. And actually, during this century, whites will become a very distinct minority. Whites will only be about 10% of the world population. Blacks will be 25%, and the rest will be colored people. But if you consider blacks as really being colored people, then that's 90% of the world population will be colored people. So President Obama is representative of the majority of the people in the world today. My teacher of my heart council class has a white Danish mother and a black dad from Trinidad. She is brown. And her son is brown. You know what? I wonder if there will be any representatives of the other colored people on the earth at this conference coming up this month in Florida. What about all of the Mongolian people? There are more Mongolians than just about anybody, any other colored people group. And what about the Japanese or Chinese or Korean, Polynesian, Hawaiian, Indians from India, or Native American Indians, or Arabs, Mexicans, Central America Native Indians, South America Native Indians, Vietnamese, Cambodian, Indonesian, Eskimo, Filipino, Pakistani, Malaysian, Egyptians, Moroccans, Libyans, Algerians, all of these people are colored people. You can look up all these ethnic groups on the earth in Wikipedia. There are hundreds and hundreds of them. That's just a few that I just named. And I just wonder how many representatives of these colored people will be attending the conference in Naples, Florida. Just how relevant is in an association for the advancement of colored people if it doesn't represent all of the colored people? Perhaps they should just change their name to the National Association for the Advancement of Black People. But then blacks will be 25% of the population soon, while colored and whites will only be 10%. And colored people will be 65%. So if you would just count blacks with colored people, then that's 90% of the population will be colored people. So why would colored people need an association for their advancement? They are the majority. They will rule the world. I was having lunch with one of my wedding vendors recently, and I asked her, "Christy, what color are you?" And she said, "Well, my father was Spanish from northern Spain. He had white skin and blue eyes. But my mother is native Cuban Indian, and she is brown. So I guess I'm light brown." In Florida, the state had to take the ethnic part off of the marriage license because what ethnicity is a person who has a white mother and a black father? People call President Obama the first black president. This is not true. He is not black. He is brown. He's the first brown president, and he represents the majority of the people of the world. And he didn't know anything about racism until he moved to Los Angeles when he was 14 years old to go to high school. He was brown, just like all of his community in Hawaii and in Indonesia. He never thought of himself as being any different from anybody else. But when he got to Los Angeles, he ran into black people who called him Uncle Tom and white people who called him nigger. He wasn't accepted by either group, because he wasn't one of either one of them. And I cannot believe that a Supreme Court justice would even say that President Obama is the first black man to be elected president. President Obama is not a black person. He is a brown person. In the Jewish community, you have to be born of a Jewish mother to be Jewish. So if this was true of white people, then President Obama is white because he was born of a white mother. And to say that he was elected because he was supported by the elitists? What in the world does Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas mean by this? I just don't get it. Does he mean rich people? Because the rich people were for Romney. Does he mean academic people? Because academic people usually don't take sides politically. What does he mean by elitists? This concerns me because he sits on the highest court in the land. There has to be, deep down at the cellular level, racial prejudice here, or, saying it in a better way, a bigot. So where are we today as far as race relations are concerned? So what is a racist? Is it being racist to say I prefer to live in my own culture with other white people? Is it a racist to say I really don't enjoy some other cultures? Does this make me prejudiced? Or do I have the right to make my own choice of my friends, to make my own choice about who I live with? To make my own choice about what I like and what I don't like. Where, when, how, and why does personal choice make a person a racist? Well, in my dictionary, in my language, there is no such thing as a racist or racism, because this word sure needs to be taken out of our language, because we are all members of the human race. The human race manifests in many different ways, male and female, transgenders, white skin, brown skin, yellow skin, red skin, black skin, and more. And as more and more and more of these different skin colors mix and mix and mix, we are all going to end up brown. We could maybe use, you know, more ambiguous and less emotionally charged terms for designating certain things, like populations or peoples or ethnic groups or cultures or communities. A lot of definitions of racism do include beliefs based on cultural, national, ethnic, or religious stereotypes. But you know what? A stereotype is just a way to lump everybody all up in one great big bundle and make everybody in that bundle exactly the same. So this definition of racism is not going to work, because no one is like anyone else. Every single situation is unique. Every single person within every single situation is unique and different. And in this universe, nothing has to be done the same way twice. Biologists talk in terms of fuzzy sets of traits. I thought to myself, what in the world are fuzzy sets of traits? But the writer of this article explained that in between the endpoints of a dichotomy, and so a dichotomy would be white versus black, true versus false, on versus off, right versus wrong, good versus bad. He says that in between the endpoints of these dichotomies are fuzzy sets of traits. So what we would call that are all the shades of gray in between black and white. And that is where the truth is. Everyone is brown. But the majority of the scientific community says that they just think it's silly the way people talk about racism, because all human living humans belong to the same species, Homo sapiens. We are Homo sapiens. No fuzzy sets of traits. There is one race, the human race, as a species. We are Homo sapiens. But still in our dictionaries, there's all these definitions. Racism is a belief that a race counts, that race, the one I found that was the best. The belief that race accounts for differences in human character or ability, and that members of a race share certain attributes which make that group as a whole either less desirable or more desirable, inferior or superior. This is absolutely true. I accept this definition of racism. As a Homo sapien, we all have differences in human character and ability. Since we are all members of the human race, and each and every one of us is different from each and every other person, we all have different human characteristics and abilities. And within the race, there are superior and inferior people. less desirable or more desirable. This is true. These are the differences in human character and ability. So we have to look at human character, because that's where the differences are. You know, you'll hear a person say that generosity is the mark of his character, or what a character he is, meaning that they're unusual or different or funny. And this recent story of Reese Witherspoon's April 19th arrest shows off a side of that actress that, well, isn't exactly her famous good girl image. She was very feisty in this situation, and her friends tried to say, oh, yes, she was out of character. But another girl said, you know what, she's a real person, not the person she plays as an actress. Because the origin of the word character comes from the Greek word that means graving tool or its mark. You know, a tool that you would use to engrave something, and the mark of the engraving. So a mark is something you can see, something you feel. So our character is our mark, the outward side of what we are. And some people are very good at creating an outward character that is totally different from what they really are inside. So what is character? Character refers to moral qualities, ethical qualities, principles, the individual's personality. So a character can have a variety of attributes, including either the existence of or lack of virtues such as integrity, courage, fortitude, honesty, and loyalty. And they could have either good behaviors and habits or bad behaviors and habits. Moral character primarily refers to qualities that distinguish one individual from another, but that at a cultural level, a set of moral behaviors to which a social group adheres to most of the time can be said to unite and define it culturally. Now, according to the Dalai Lama, ethical qualities are patience, tolerance, forgiveness, and humility. And he teaches how to empathize with another person, to counter negative emotions, and to cultivate patience and compassion. And then the personality is the total sum of all the characteristics possessed by the person. And personality actually is the combination of the outer and the inner characteristics that determine the impression that a person makes upon other people. So just this week, in a new class I just started, and certainly not coincidentally, I believe, we did a very interesting project. It was the first day of the class, so none of us knew each other. And the leader gave us all a piece of paper and told us to write our name up at the top of the paper. And on the other side of the paper were about 100 adjectives that she had provided to us. And then we passed our paper to the person to the right. And then based only on our intuition and our sense of each person, we were to write down our impression of them. And we passed these papers all around the room until all of us had evaluated each person. And then we read the evaluations. Now, these evaluations were made by reading the electromagnetic field of each person and whatever energies that were manifesting there. Because whatever we are is what we are. We can't be something we're not. Like Popeye said, I am that I am that I am. So if you'd like to try this exercise, you could put your name on a piece of paper and give it to a total stranger, someone at the mall or someone on the bus or someone in a different department at your work, and ask them to give you a reading. The Bible says that Jesus could read the hearts of men. He knew what it was that was going on inside of them, motivating them and energizing them. You know, and we can too. So this way everybody is equal in that we are all accessed totally as an individual and evaluated strictly on exactly what we are. So it was very interesting to me that total strangers saw me as confident, steady, full of energy, bold, dramatic, determined, accomplished, dazzling, valuable, omniscient, mystical, unique, authoritative, disciplined, achiever, and intelligent. What do you think a stranger would say about you? So, there is superiority and inferiority in the human race. And what this means is there is always going to be someone who's smarter than you are and who's dumber than you are. There's always going to be someone who is richer than you are, but poorer than you are. There's always going to be someone who's better at tennis than you are, can swim faster, kick the football farther, and get more home runs. There's always going to be someone who's healthier than you are or sicker than you are. There's always going to be someone who's prettier than you are and uglier than you are. I overheard a conversation of a girl at a tea party I went to once saying, "I'm the poorest person in our group." Hers was a group of doctors' wives, and this woman lived in a 7,000-square-foot home. They had their own yacht and an airplane, and she had 20 winter coats in her closet. But she and her doctor husband were the poorest couple in their group of friends. And I'm the only one in the group I run with that doesn't have a college education. Everyone else has at least a bachelor's, and most have their master's and a PhD. But they allow me to be a part because I'm a good researcher, and I can usually come up with more information than they can. But if this group had a rule that you had to have a degree to be a member of their group, then I wouldn't be able to be a member of their group. And I believe that all groups have the right to set those parameters for their group. And why would someone want to be in a group if they didn't have the qualifications? Why wouldn't that person want to find a group that likes what they like, does what they do, and is at least within the realm of the possible? Years ago, Leonard Nimoy, as Dr. Spock, made a record that was very popular. He read the Desiderata, I apologize if I've said that wrong, which says, "If you compare yourself with others, you may become vain or bitter. For always there will be greater and lesser persons than yourself." And the Bible says that they measuring themselves and comparing themselves among themselves are not wise. You know, actually, the act of comparing ourselves with others isn't fair to ourselves. You're not like anybody else. How is it helpful to compare yourself with anybody else? I think in so many instances, racism is discussed within the realm of economics, like who earns more than who gets more jobs than who has more than who. Like achieving a certain economic status is some sort of a proof that a person is valuable. Well, what about a person who doesn't care a hoot about these things, who spends their life in research or science where paycheck or profit isn't the test of a person's accomplishment? If a person is fulfilling their lifelong dream to know everything there is to know about the Tootsie Fly, then they're happy and they feel rewarded because they're doing what they love to do and they're being true to themselves. Now, I have to agree there are cultural differences. All of my ancestors were English with a dignified sense of propriety. And they were also Quakers, so they remained neutral during the period of the Revolution. And Quakers also have no male hierarchy in their religious meetings. They believe that anyone can preach the message, as all persons have the Spirit of God and can speak, male or female, black or white, old or young, rich or poor, educated or ignorant. And this philosophy is also expressed in all of the Asian cultures. It's instinctive to an Asian to bow to you when he or she first meets you and when you say goodbye. And I have always loved the bow. You know what the bow means? The bow says, the God in me salutes the God in you. You know, if we all could all think in terms of everyone having God in them, then racism hasn't got a chance. I don't think anybody wants to criticize, judge, exclude, or make fun of God. The breath of God breathes our lungs, and the spark of God beats our hearts. So let's all just begin to bow to everybody. The God in me salutes the God in you. One of my neighbors is Hispanic, and I notice she makes a distinction between being Hispanic and not being Mexican. Hispanics believe they are better than Mexicans, smarter, more sophisticated, because they can trace their roots to South America and eventually to Europe. But with their so-called sophistication, the Hispanics have also developed the ways of the user and the abuser. Mexicans are to Hispanics like white people are to Native American Indians. Europe went to the Americas to look for gold and silver and sugar and spice. And the Europeans mixed with the Native Indians of the regions, and they also brought in blacks from Africa to help with the mining and agriculture. And these people mixed with the Indians and with the white people. And as the cultures continued to intermingle, there was a more homogeneous outcome, and soon original hereditary factors began to be indistinct and less recognizable in outward expression. And so, like I say, we're all moving towards everybody being brown. My favorite neighbors are Jewish, because I just love the Jewish women. They have such a sense of their importance, having never been taught to submit to their husbands, as they are taught that the dominion was given to man and woman, quoting Genesis. The dominion was given unto them. My one Jewish lady friend is Russian with blonde hair and blue eyes, and my other Jewish neighbor ancestors were from Romania, and she loves to cook goulash for us. Also, in order to be Jewish, you have to be born of a Jewish mother. It doesn't matter what your father is. So if this had been true in the white community, then President Obama would just be another white president. In my wedding business, my experience is that Japanese weddings always start right on time. They have a very healthy cultural respect for time. Get it right the first time, on time. And Mexican weddings usually are running at least an hour late. But I love the Mexican culture. It's so much softer than the Hispanic culture, which seems loud and demonstrative and dramatic to me, and it assails my English background. But I love the Mexican culture. They love God, and they are so loving and kind. I worked for 3 years with a Chinese girl at the front desk of a hotel, and she said to me one day, "Marcy, watch out for Chinese stab you in the back," which I thought was such a curious thing for her to say to me, and I wondered what it meant. Well, I found out several months later. There were two shifts, 7 to 3 p.m. and 3 to 11 p.m., and we all could do everybody's job, so we developed a system where we could trade shifts if we wanted to, just so long as we went through the manager so she would know who was supposed to be on what shift. Well, at the last minute, I needed to trade a shift, and I asked this Chinese girl if she would trade, and she said yes. And I said, well, since it's so soon, we'll just do it. We don't need to go through the manager. And she said, okay. But 2 days later, I was called into the manager's office, and I took a dressing down because I had not gone through her to change the shifts. And I found out that the Chinese girl had gone to her and told her, even though it really was my responsibility to do it. But the Chinese girl didn't want to get into trouble, so she reported it. Now, I was totally wrong here, and I found out that even though she had said yes to my face, she went to the manager behind my back. But I was, I admired her sense of ethics and morality and how she stayed loyal, first to herself and then to the company. Even though she seemed agreeable to me, within her own personal character, she was not willing to go along with me down a path of disobedience and lack of respect for the established policies. And she taught me a really good lesson. Every person has a certain cultural background that is part of the way they look at things. Black people have a very definite culture. If you read President Obama's book, Dreams from My Father, you will get the best look at the black culture that you can get, straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Cultures take years and years and years of a community living together in interpersonal relationships to develop, and cultures are a reflection of a community as a whole. But none of this is racism. It's just the way it is. Everybody has a culture. Everyone has the right to live and enjoy their culture, as long as they respect everyone else's life and culture. So part of the secret of us all getting along is respect. So there really isn't such a thing as racism. We need to get rid of this word, racism, take it out of our dictionary, racist and racism, and start calling it what it really is. Bigotry. These people are bigots. Now, a bigot is someone who, as a result of their prejudice, treats other people with hatred, contempt, and intolerance on the basis of a person's race, gender, sexual orientation, national origin, religion, socioeconomic status, and any other status. And the only way to change a bigot is, first of all, they would want to have to change. And the way they could change is to go down into their heart and find out why they are so unhappy and let them start with some heart therapy. You know, they could take all these classes I've been taking. They could also listen to my shows on loving and being loved, heaven and hell, and The Mistress Part 1 and Part 2, where I go into great detail on the ways that our bigotry keeps us separated from people and keeps us so unhappy. So the most important thing I want to say on this show today is, we are all members of one race. It is called the human race. We are Homo sapiens. We are all members of one race. It is called the human race. As a human, we all have a body that operates exactly the same. We all have the same two basic emotions: love and fear. Thoughts and behaviors are either going to be coming from a place of love or a place of fear. If our thoughts and behaviors are coming from a place of fear, our life will have anxiety, anger, sadness, depression, inadequacy, confusion, hurt, loneliness, guilt, and shame. If our thoughts and behaviors are coming from a place of love, we will experience joy, happiness, caring, trust, compassion, truth, contentment, and satisfaction. And you know, this is the United States of America. We are a republic. Which is based upon the rights of the individual. We are not a democracy. This distinction can be discussed on another show, but it's important to understand that we are a republic. We do not have the authority of the majority. We have representative authority, and each of us is represented in the government. And my mother used to tell me that the majority is always wrong anyway. And in a republic, every single person is free with the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This was true in 1776, and it is still true today. As a citizen of the United States of America, you are free to be whatever you want to be. There are no boundaries, no restrictions, unless you impose restrictions upon yourself by comparing yourself with others. The only restriction is what you believe about yourself and what you believe about others. Okay, now to my solution, my absolute perfect solution that will end all racism. In the more recent years, there's been a great move to recognize that handicapped people need some extra care. So at all places of business, there are, you know, handicapped parking spots right by the front door, and wheelchairs available in the store, the grocery store. And today we have a lot of other ways of categorizing people. We have this new group of special needs adults and special needs children. And then we have tons of people on disability. Well, our response to these people is usually compassion. We don't expect them to come up to traditional standards of behavior. We allow them to be special. I had a groom one time ask me if his bride could bring her service dog, and I said, well, yes, of course, but what is her disability? Because the beach we are going to go to has 26 steps to get down to it. He said, oh, no, she has an emotional disability, and the dog has to always be with her. Well, I had never heard of this before. And in her vows to the groom, she said, thank you for accepting me just the way that I am and loving me just the way that I am. So I'm going to propose that we all become handicapped special needs people with disabilities. All of us are handicapped in some way. If it's just a lack of paternal or maternal love as a child, or being abused as a child, or abandoned, or some of us are handicapped by experiences of loving and being loved, betrayals, disappointments, rejections. Some of us are handicapped by poverty. Some of us are handicapped by genetic or environmental illnesses. All of us have special needs because all of us are special. We are all a community of handicapped, special needs, disabled people. So if we started to look at everybody else as handicapped in some way, with special needs and disabled, then we could let our empathy and our compassion move out from our heart to treat them with love and understanding. And to look at ourselves as handicapped with special needs too. Give yourself a break. Get rid of that judge and jury inside of you. And begin to realize that you are who you are. Just be your authentic self and find your purpose and live a happy life. You know, the good news is we don't have to stay handicapped and disabled. We can create a new story for ourselves. So start today with your own personal association for the advancement of yourself. No one else can determine what is true for you. Only you and you alone can determine what is true for you, what is right for you, what is best for you. what you like and what you don't like, you still have that freedom today to express yourself. And all that is asked of you is that you respect me and you allow for me to have the same right to be free, to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So I would like to close my show today by sharing with you the 4 steps to happiness. And I would say that doing these 4 steps to happiness could end all bigotry in your life. And these 4 steps were developed by Valerie Shepherd at www.heartoflivingvibrantly.com. Valerie is Black, and she has these 4 steps: wake up, make up, shake up, and take up. So, number 1, wake up to the truth of who you are. You are God manifesting in the flesh, here and now, and the kingdom of God is within you. Make up a new story about your life and about how you want to live your life, and make yourself the star of this new story. Shake up and release everything that is not divine. Any identity, personality, woundology, ego, beliefs, values, or perceptions from the past, anything that might be holding you back from expressing your divine potential and fulfilling your purpose, living authentically as who you are. And number 4, now take up action to make your new story the real story of your real life. Thank you, Valerie, for those wonderful 4 steps out of bigotry into freedom. My music is by visionarymusic.com. Music that's created to support us as we make transitions and create great and new expanses in our life. And thank you so much for listening. It just blesses my heart so much when I see the statistics every week. And I know you're out there and you're listening. And I look forward to sharing again with you next week at this same time. And for now, this is Marcy Ann saying aloha. Aloha means hello, goodbye, and I love you.